Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Excited for today's episode. As promised, we're going to be doing more of your listener questions. So today is one of our favorite episodes because we get to do a Q&A from y'all, the listeners. So first of all, shout out to the new listeners. Welcome into the Fasting for Life family. Thanks for giving us a shot. If you want to know more about my journey or Tommy's journey, head back to episode one, give it a listen. We share our story and ultimately why we now do what we do so many episodes and years later, having now taken thousands of people through our challenge formats, as well as hundreds and hundreds of coaching clients. So excited to have you with us. Long-term listeners, shout out to y'all as well. Keep the downloads, subscribes, rates, reviews, whatever it is that... shows that you are following us and telling the podcast world and the metrics that we are bringing value each and every week. We appreciate y'all as well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Saw a funny post about what does OG mean in the Facebook community group, right? What's an OG? Well, if you know what it is, then you are one. But if you'd like to know, OG means there's a bunch of different definitions, but old guard, original gangster, new Urban Dictionary. We had some clients at one point.
June,
old grandma or old grandpa, old guard.
love that.
You know, old guy, old gal, right? But it means that you've been with us. You're part of the Fasting for Life family. You listen to the podcast. You're in our community group. If you want to join, you can head to the show notes. Warm, inviting, open to different ways to fast, not just dogmatic in one way. But I really love these podcast episodes where we do the question and answers because we really get to tap into the stuff that you guys are thinking on a day-to-day basis, which we were at one point as well. And there's always overlap, like always, without a doubt. We get the most response on these Q&As. Be like, man, I've been struggling with that too. Or man, I thought that too. Or so I'm excited for today, Tommy.
Yeah, me too. Because this is a time where we can dial up the reassurance factor a little bit, dial up the confidence factor a little bit, which means that I can take my next decision point and make my next fasting decision with that much more emphasis and connection and commitment to it than what I would have done if I was, you know, had this, you know, a few more question marks. A little bit of self-doubt, unfortunately, can slow down the process very, very quickly. So that's also why I love these conversations.
Yep. So we're just going to come out the gate hot today, Tommy. We're going to talk about alcohol.
Okay. Oh.
Hop on the booze train. Get on the... we went to Nashville for a seminar once. And they have like those pedal like keg buses. Like you just... You like literally like...
Yeah, you go around like the city with a bunch of people.
Yeah. And you're like pedaling around the city or something. Yep. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, those are hilarious.
And then we, what are those things? The booze cruises, right? So hop on all aboard the conversation of alcohol. Now I'm going to frame this out, share a little bit about probably our own journey and perspective on it and how it's changed. We are not all or nothing when it comes to sustainable lifestyle. You can find support for and against alcohol consumption. You can, we all know, you know, that overdoing and overconsuming anything is not going to be good for your health long term.
Of course.
We don't want to diminish the potential destructive nature of alcohol either. I've seen it in my own family with alcoholism. I've always had a decent relationship with it outside of some stupid college years. So not trying to placate or diminish anyone on either side of this conversation, but it is an absolute question that we get very often, which is, what about alcohol?
Yeah.
And it's personalized. I've been without alcohol since September. I used to love my craft beer.
Yeah.
I used to love my different tequilas and palates and what's best for a ranch water versus, I never drank margaritas, but what's best for a ranch water or a tequila old fashioned, right? Worked in the restaurant industry for years. It was a part of my lifestyle for a long time, but it's faded away and it no longer is. Didn't have a rock bottom experience, but I will tell you that it was a constant negotiation.
Yeah.
And this same conversation can happen with food. So stay tuned because we're going to talk about that in just a minute. That's why we're pairing these two conversations together. So what about it? Do I need to cut it out? Should I decrease it? So we want to just talk about it big picture. Is it something that's serving your long-term goals? And is it something that you can control? And is it something that you're willing to either give up or change to get the ultimate result that you want?
Wow. So many fasting decisions are based on things like, what have I done recently?
Yes.
What am I looking forward to? Or what can I not stop thinking about? You know, whether it be food or in this case, drink. Also, we've talked recently about some discipline and willpower and how those are not dictating everything that we do. And they're not the key to a good fasting lifestyle. They're not the key to good habits, but they do affect the equation. They affect my next decision point. And we know that alcohol obviously diminishes inhibitions. And when that happens, if we did need some discipline or some willpower, it tends to be at a very low level.
Maybe I have zero discipline at family gatherings. When I'd have a drink or two, right?
It's gone.
Working late at night, have a craft beer or two. It wasn't a serving of the Boulder Canyon potato chips. It was a bag.
Yeah.
And then it was maybe a couple spoonfuls of peanut butter before bed.
Right. Yeah. What else is in that pantry?
Right. And then the next day, it's that recency, right? So the next day with alcohol for me made it way more difficult to want to fast or stick to a fast. And physiologically, it kicks you out of fat burning for as long as the time that it takes for your body to burn off the alcohol because it sees it as a toxicity, is an emergency. Hey, stop doing this over here. Let's go process this alcohol and get it out of the system as fast as possible.
All hands on deck.
Never mind if you do have too much or consume the sugary stuff and you wake up with a hangover the next day. A nice cheesy pizza feels a lot better than a 24-hour fast.
Right. Oh, man.
So it wasn't like cut or dry cold turkey, right? But it was a gradual kind of, the juice isn't really worth the squeeze. And that's really where like the transition in your core values, the transition is in your identity as a healthy person, maybe coming from a sick, you know, metabolic state with potential disease processes already there, like me as an undiagnosed pre-diabetic. With lab numbers that were all over the map, not having to plan my naps just to be able to make it through the clinic schedule that I had and being a husband and a dad and all of that stuff. And it just, the perspective has shifted, which is I ultimately changed my perception on my decision-making when it comes to my fasting lifestyle. So it's not just, should I get rid of alcohol? It's like, well, if you want faster results and an easier path, then I'm going to say, ditch the alcohol. But if you're like, well, no, I'm a wine enthusiast and I want to have a couple glasses of wine a week, then you need to create the plan that's going to allow you to feel confident and good while incorporating the non-negotiables into your fasting schedule.
Wow. What about OMAD? OMAD comes to mind for me a lot because we've asked thousands of people, what's your favorite meal? If you were just going to choose one meal for the day, one meal a day, OMAD, which one would it be? So it's like 96% say dinner.
Dinner OMAD, right? Oh, dinner, yeah, OMAD. The mini masterclass, right?
Yeah.
So six simple steps to put one meal a day fasting. This is our one of the original resources we created.
Yeah.
Right? Comes with some videos, really cool. 6,000. I don't even know the number now. People that have actually like completed it and responded to us.
Question.
But it's OMAD dinner.
So here's the tricky part though. If alcohol is part of your dinner routine, it can be tough to break out of that. But then it can also lead to a slippery slope where it's hard to set my next fasting timer after dinner. Dinner becomes a window. Okay, well, what happens during window? Well, it's later in the day. My insulin levels are already high. Insulin sensitivity is low. And so all of a sudden, I'm having this prolonged.
A long day. Yeah. You're stressed. You're tired.
Right. And then, you know, let me some dopamine from the food, some dopamine from the wine or, you know, the alcohol coming in. And it can be very tricky to break out of that cycle. But that cycle can also lead to a lot of plateaus, frustration, unmet expectations. And it can really kill the power of OMAD, though, too, because dinner OMAD can be a very, very effective tool for fat loss for some at some points, for maintenance for other people at some points. But it can really shoot a really good fasting tool in the foot by putting alcohol or definitely too much alcohol you know, with that tool.
Right, absolutely. And that really kind of comes into, so it's ultimately it's a personal decision. So you have to play around with it and put some intention behind it and make the decision, you know, is it part of my plan or is it not? And really, you know, weigh the pros and cons. And in today's world, it's really cool because now there's actually a bunch of products out there like nootropic drinks, like hop water, shout out hop water, dry farm wines, which is, you know, no sugar, you know, keto friendly, carb friendly, no additives. There's, you know, free spirits, which is like, you know, non-alcoholic Guinness. Heck, Guinness has a non-alcoholic beer now.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, like, holy heck, where was that during college? So,
you wouldn't have cared.
That's true. Do an Irish car bomb with a alcohol-free Guinness. Just kidding.
Yeah, good luck.
Right. So just a question that we get and we wanted to address. So it's really up to you to put the intention behind the decision and then try, play around with it and see what and if and or when it is serving your fasting efforts and your long-term goals. So this, the question of OMAD, Tommy, really goes hand in hand with this, which is the bridge. So the second question, which is a two-part question, I know you're going to unpack it a little bit in terms of different skill sets when we talk about some of these fasting windows. So this question came from Kristen in the Facebook community group and said, how long did it take you to get to 20-hour fast or OMAD?
It's a great question because where a lot of folks will start is maybe at a 16-8 fast. Not necessarily for everybody, but that's a very common place to start. Sometimes, 5-2 or some sort of modified schedule. But when we're talking about kind of ramping up, how I like to think about it is if you're doing, let's say, 16-8 and you're trying to get to what they call a warrior fast sometimes, a 20-hour fast with a 4-hour nutrition window, I like to just break that up. We talked about habit ladders and stacking habits, you know, recently. So bringing down, not just going, okay, I want to jump from 16-8 all the way to 24. So maybe it's going from 16-8 to 18-6 and then to 20/4, or break it down even further and just go, let me go from 16-8 to 17-7. Right. And then I can go to 18-6 and then, and so on and so on. So maybe you can break that up every few days, ratchet it up by another hour, or, you know, maybe give yourself a week and then ratchet it up by an hour. And then that way it doesn't feel like you changed everything all at once. You can kind of internalize some of those changes and get used to them before going to the next step. So I think that that's relatively straightforward. What's a bit less straightforward though, would be making the jump to one meal a day, which I find to be a different skill set versus, you know, a window. Because even a 2-hour window, like a 22-hour fast with a 2-hour eating window versus an OMAD, which I would consider less than 60 minutes, usually more on like the 30-minute side, so that it's not like an extended session, is definitely a different skill set. Because now I'm looking at it like, this is not an opportunity to just eat whatever I want. I'm going to be overly full. I'm going to be tired. I'm just going to overconsume potentially. I don't want to feel uncomfortable after my meal, but at the same time, I might be doing this for, like I said a few minutes ago, maintenance purposes to maintain my weight, or maybe I'm doing it for fat loss purposes too. So I now have to decide what I want to be focused on. What is my goal for this fast? Because when I start with 16-8, that might be at the beginning when I'm starting fasting, and I have a lot more room for error. I have more weight to lose. It kind of, everything, like more things work for longer in the beginning. Whereas, you know, after some of the weight comes off, I start to burn less calories because I'm a smaller version of myself. I don't have as much room for error here. And then also fasting slippage can come in. I can find opportunities to bring in more calorie dense foods, all of these kind of things. So all of that being said, there's a few more decision points when you go to one meal a day that involve like actual choices that aren't just kind of ratcheting up and tightening up the windows a little bit. Does that make sense?
It does. And if you're looking for more guidance on how to ramp up, you can head to the show notes and grab our fasting, our blueprint to fasting for fat loss. It's a 20-page PDF. It's a free resource. We'll zoom it over into your inbox. It's yours. It has some different, you know, what week one through week four would look like, some tangible stuff. But the long-term sustainability or the results come from the nuanced or the intangible stuff that you were just talking about, Tommy, right? So I know for me, when I first started fasting and I lost the 48 and a half pounds in 50 days. I like to say 50 and 50. I should have just made it 50 in like 52 days. If I could
then
go
you
back,
you wouldn't still have to keep going 4 years. And
yeah. I could just say it, but I want to be transparent. So
sure.
About 25 of that came back on because my lifestyle habits had not yet changed. Mm-hmm. Right. So the first time I did a 24-hour fast, I remember texting you and you're like, okay, don't be dumb when you break your fast. And I had the two grass-fed burgers with raw cheese and lettuce wraps and a little bit of rice and a piece of sweet potato. Mm-hmm. And then we had popcorn in the kitchen sink. And then I had the Kirkland protein bars that I used to eat throughout the day.
Yeah.
I had a chocolate one and then I had the cookie dough one. And I remember this vividly. And that wasn't it. There was popcorn. I said popcorn with the Kerrygold butter. There's a couple other things in there too.
I'm uncomfortable. I'm full just thinking about it.
Right. Because I was like, I haven't eaten 24 hours. I've never done this before. Let me just bowl.
Right.
Let me just go. Right.
Yeah.
And it was all good food. It wasn't, you know, Wendy's Frosties, fries dipped in Frosties. And when's the last time I had a Frosty? Do they even have those around here? No, we're in Whataburger country. So I don't even know if there's Wendy's around here.
Right.
So it wasn't like, you know, gas station specials, right? Like it was all home cooked good food. I mean, Kirkland protein bars, you know, they're not the best, but they're not also candy bars either.
Yeah.
So my point is though that, you know, I did OMAD and dove right into it, but I didn't have the skill set yet to make that work, right? Yeah. So my skill set wasn't there. And then even after I lost all the weight quickly, it was like, okay, and we hear this from people all the time. So it's, and we talked about this in the last Q&A and we congratulated the woman who had asked the question, hey, good job for catching the runaway bus before it gets completely away from you.
Yeah.
You know, was doing great. The holidays came in, knocked her off track. Okay. Well, you've never been in that position through that period of life or through the holiday season before. So now you're on the other side. And before all the weight came back, right, I caught it between the 22 and 25 pound range. I was like, okay, hold on. So OMAD isn't a maintenance schedule for me because my OMAD skill set was still eating like the old me, right? That was metabolically dysfunctioned, that had insulin resistance, that was a pre-diabetic that didn't know I was a pre-diabetic because my blood sugar was normal, but my insulin resistance number was incredibly high. It was like 22 or 23, and I had all this visceral fat, right? So I had insulin resistance, so the calories in, calories out wasn't working. I was doing the work. So the skill set of these two, this 20-hour fast versus OMAD, is different if we think about it in terms of a window and eating opportunities, is what I heard.
Yes, that's exactly the main point. And I'll follow that up with just the fact that when you settle into OMAD and that becomes a skill set, it's also important to remember it might be helpful to vary the actual meal that you're using from time to time.
Yes.
And I find that to be less the case when you're utilizing an eating window. So whether that's because you're not necessarily looking for fat loss at this point or you're maintaining, you know, previous progress, it just doesn't seem to be as important of a factor for most people that we kind of take through and that we've seen and talked to. So all that being said, I really like flexing the meal muscle, even if it's not every single day, regardless of maintenance or fat loss, thinking about it like a window sometimes and thinking about it like it's a meal and I got the one meal today. This is what that's going to look like. And then I'm setting my fasting timer. Like I'll check in again tomorrow.
it's really hard to overdo a meal. I didn't do a meal.
Yeah. You did a window.
I did a window, but it was an OMAD window.
It was a pretty short window, right? When like, was it 60 or maybe like it was 90 minutes?
No, because we did Pokrun too. So it was like, it was probably just under, if I remember, I don't remember. I got that old journal somewhere, but it was about two, it was probably under 2 hours.
Right? Okay. Okay. About 2 hours. Yeah. We still hear that all the time.
We do.
People thinking about 2 hour windows as like a meal, you know? So I think that distinction is really important.
Agree. Agree. And this kind of leads into another question that we had come in. Help. I feel ravenous after ending my fast, but then I feel terrible after I eat.
Yes. That's how you felt.
Preach it, sister. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the same things apply. I mean, the very first one would be just take a breath after the fasting timer goes off. Like you hit that window mark, or hey, it's dinner time. It's 5 o'clock, it's 6 o'clock, whatever the case may be for you. Take a breath. You don't have to consume immediately. Give it a little buffer. Soak in the win, you know, for a few minutes, and let the hunger isn't really all that urgent at that point. But sometimes mentally we need to kind of catch up to that thought. And so we can just slow things down a bit, and that's going to help prevent just consuming way too much, way too fast, which is then going to help a lot with the, how comfortable do I feel? Like your satiation tends to take a little bit longer. So if we're not cognizant of that, we can overdo it and overfill ourselves before we actually feel satiated and like comfortably full.
There's so many different starting points or rabbit holes we can go down with this question. Like I want so much more context, right?
Of course.
I feel ravenous after ending my fast, but then I feel terrible after I eat. Okay. Well, slow down. Mm. Great. Well, what are you breaking your fast with?
Yeah.
How much are you eating? How quickly are you eating? Right? How long was your fast? How is your hydration? And I'm not talking about water, right? Like how is your hydration? Is this the first time you've pushed your window? When is your meal? How is your sleep? Because there are so many moving parts to this ravenous thing. Because with fasting, when you get more consistent with it, and we did a podcast episode recently on this where we're talking about ADF, alternate day fasting, and the hunger hormones and the satiety hormones. So in the short term on ADF, I don't remember, I think it was a 12-week study, 8 or 12-week study. In the short term, the ADF folks, the fasting folks, reported that their ghrelin, their growling, their hunger was greater.
Yeah.
But then that went away. Yeah. No, first couple of weeks, right? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the times in the challenges, actually, like within the week, people will notice a change when we do our 5 and 7 day challenges, right? So what they found was that the ghrelin was elevated, which is an empty stomach hunger hormone.
Just a mechanical.
It's mechanical.
Yeah.
Growl, ghrelin. That's how I remember it. That's how I remembered it for national boards back in the day, right? But then there are these other secondary hunger hormones, peptides and cholecystokinins and all these. And then you have leptin, which is the other player, leptin ghrelin, right? That's telling your brain, hey, I'm full, or I need to eat, if we're talking about insulin, leptin resistance, et cetera. But my point of bringing this up was that at the end of the ADF, the ghrelin, physical ghrelin in the blood, in the stomach, in the body was measured to be higher. But the satiety and the hunger, the actual physical hunger, was way less. And that was with 50 to 55%, if I recall, carbohydrate intake on this 12-week study.
Yeah, not optimal.
Not optimal.
For those feelings
of hunger. Not protein paced, not fat filled, and then carbohydrate backfilled, but like almost standard American diet type foods, right?
Yeah.
So if you're feeling ravenous after ending your fast and terrible after you eat, I mean, slow down. Focus on your hydration and then really hone in on what is your thought process been throughout the day. If you're like just obsessing about the food, maybe you're pushing your window too long, or maybe it's not the right time of the month, right? For your cycle. Yeah. And then ultimately, what are those food choices that could be the thing that's driving the insulin response to make you feel terrible?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of specific examples, like some really good, loaded, healthy sandwiches, even with like really thoughtful, intentional bread, even reduced carbohydrate bread, or, you know, something like a whole grain, not just a whole wheat, but sometimes like a less processed bread, a specialty type. But as full of protein as that meal may be, even just that, like breaking your fast like that can make you uncomfortable because you just tend to consume more of it. So, you know, just like taking your normal carbohydrate load that would be on a plate, a fast breaking plate, and just cutting that in half might be a good first step to help, you know, on the next time that you break your fast.
Or maybe going from that one meal into the two smaller meal window.
Mm.
Right?
Great idea. Yeah.
So going from OMAD to TMAD, but do the 20-hour fast and you know, like, because it was the question previously from Kristen, how long did it take you to get from 20 to OMAD? 20-hour mm-hmm. fast to OMAD, right? Well, maybe it's time to do a little prequel to the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Put some foods you enjoy eating in there too, as long as they're not the refined processed crap, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to break a longer fast, especially if you're ravenous with just pure sugar.
No.
You will feel terrible and your stomach will hurt, right? So
don't let cravings dictate how you break your fast. Like, go into it with a little bit more of a plan. Yep. Even if there's something that you'd like to include that's, you know, something that you're really looking forward to, even if it's higher on the carbohydrate side, put it later in the meal. Put it after you've already broken that. That'll be better.
Yep. Last one here, Tommy.
Okay.
Is in regards to, this is a previous challenger who mentioned that their why mm-hmm. was no longer motivating them.
Ooh, okay.
So we talk about big picture sustainability. We know the stats. We share them often on people, any given point. You know, 2/3 of people can lose a substantial amount of weight, but we know that 2/3 of those people regain it, and then the majority of those regain it plus some.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we all failing, right? Well, one of the things that we truly believe is that we're not anchored to something greater than the number on the scale. And what we've seen in the research and some of the meta-analysis and systemic reviews is that, you know, when people sustain their weight loss, their identity has shifted and their values and the things they deem worthy of doing on a day-to-day basis, those ultimate habits that lead to discipline, have changed or shifted.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, why is my why, what the reason I'm no longer motivating me to fast, and I no longer have the confidence that can reach my that I can currently reach my goals?
Mm.
So it's kind of like, yeah, I want this thing, but I don't really want that thing anymore. So now what do I do? Where do I start? Like, how do I get back on track with fasting is ultimately the question that was asked.
Wow. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting because it almost feels like a chicken and egg question.
Yes.
Where you go, I don't really feel motivated, but I don't really know why I don't really know what I'm looking for. So of course you don't feel motivated if you're not really sure why take the first step, right? But here's the encouraging part of that is that if you're feeling driven towards a particular goal, like a fasting goal, a weight goal, it's just time to get some of this old excess fat storage off of my frame. That means that there is an important reason for you. You just don't have the words for it or the connection to it just yet. Maybe you haven't taken the time to kind of write it out or sort out those thoughts. But obviously, if it's nagging you, then there's a reason why
yep.
it's in there. You know? And so that's like the most important thing because there's no reason to toss out the goal. There's not even a temptation to toss out the goal. We just need to do some more work and dig a little bit more so you can make that connection to it so that it's able to lead some more of your decisions proactively much more easily, more intuitively than is happening right now because of the disconnect.
I want to go and bring it back to one simple concept that we've been recently talking a lot more about, and we haven't really named it yet. So mm-hmm. I know this will sound familiar to you, Tommy, but is where we want to start so small on the thing that you want to. So you've got this big result-based goal, right? That this person's talking about.
Right.
Let's say 20 pounds, reverse diabetes, not get Alzheimer's, right? The prevention, you know, runs in my family, doctor conversation, whatever that is that originally was like, wow, this brought some attention to this thing that I want to do, this urge, this push, right? And it's like, okay, you get this big result-based goal, but then ultimately, what are you going to do in the short term to get you there? Because we have a result-based goal, yet we don't have the actions to connect the dots to get the consistency to get us there. Especially if you're not motivated. So how do we make that thing that you can do consistently day in and day out so small that it becomes second nature? There's what's the smallest thing that will move the needle enough for you to stay motivated? Because it's not motivation, action, result. It's action, result, motivation, right?
Yeah.
So what's the action you can take that you know you can do that somewhat excites you, right? Because you know it's moving you forward, that you can just build on. So you have to literally start with baby steps and find out. And once you start with those baby steps, you're going to be like, oh yeah, that's pretty easy. I can do this. And you're subconsciously going to be voting yes for you rather than just sitting at this big, hairy, audacious goal going, ugh, I'm stuck. Ugh, my why doesn't even motivate me anymore. Okay, well, then that's not your why.
Yeah.
My wife wanted to run a marathon before her first pregnancy so she could deal with labor better. God bless her.
Yeah.
I don't want to do either of those things ever. Okay. And I'm like, okay, that's a cool way to prep. I don't know if you could put anything in front of me that I'd be like, yeah, I want to run a marathon. Because I hate running. I always have. Even when I played sports successfully back in the day.
Yeah.
I hated running. I've never liked it. So that's not going to be the thing I'm going to start focusing on. Right? So if you're looking at this thing going, oh, it doesn't motivate me anymore, then it's not your thing. What are the small things you can do that you can build on?
Yeah. What if it's even just the fact that that weight goal seems really far away and
arbitrary.
That's a good one, because if it's arbitrary, I have no emotional connection to it. So how would I expect to be motivated by that? Even if it's important, even if my doctor said it's important, or if I know I'll be able to cut down on some medication or prevent a future medication, like that, right? That's important.
My kids aren't going to care when I tell them to eat the Brussels sprouts because they're good for them. They don't care.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They're not going to eat them unless, they don't have it.
Right.
Eat your Brussels sprouts. Why? They're good for you. Okay. Thanks, Dad. Not helpful. Right? By the way, I didn't realize Brussels sprouts were good until I was 35.
So. Oh yeah, me too. I'm in the same camp. So good though. So, if we can take that and go, okay, maybe I need to break up the weight goal. Maybe that's slightly motivating, but if it feels arbitrary, that's probably not going to be helpful. So what would be more helpful then would be to go, okay, I think there's got to be something here because it's nagging me. Maybe it's some superficial goal, or maybe it's a goal that I've had since I initially started to put the weight on, which was 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And so it's always been a nagging thing, which kind of means I never felt comfortable with this extra weight. It never felt like I was supposed to have it, you know? And I don't want it because it doesn't feel like it's part of me. And that almost seems like it's not very specific, but that's enough to go, yeah, that is way more than enough to push ahead and do some more consistent fasting to get it the heck off. And I would say stop worrying about the number on the scale so much and just go, you know what, if that's the important thing that resonates with you, then let's just focus on one or two actions that we can take consistently, because those are going to lead to the weight coming off over time. And I can just zoom out from the scale. I don't need to worry about that thing every day.
You can disconnect from the arbitrary thing.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think we've ever discussed it in that way. So hopefully that is helpful, because it's just, we got to zoom out a little bit, but then we got to zoom into what's that smallest thing with the least amount of activation energy that's going to motivate us to keep going. And that's really where the magic happens and where the results lie. So in any of these conversations today, the alcohol question, the ravenous, then feeling like crap after breaking your fast, mm-hmm. how long did it take you to get to 20 hours? Should we do OMAD versus 20 hours? What's the different skill sets? All of these things need repetitions. And that's why we've created the resources that we have, the blueprint. You can download that, the mini masterclass on OMAD fasting. That's in the show notes as well. You can head to the Facebook community. It's a warm, inviting community of people that agree that there's not just one strict way to get results when it comes to the art of fasting.
Absolutely.
Click the links in the show notes, Tommy. I love these Q&A conversations because there's so much overlap and threads that we see in all of the conversations and thousands of messages that we've had over the years now. So head to the show notes, grab the resource you think that's going to motivate for you. Send us a message if you want. Submit a question if you'd like. Love these. Keep them coming. We'll keep bringing the episodes each and every week, Tommy. Appreciate the conversation, sir, and we will talk soon.
Thank you. Bye.
So, you've heard today's episode, and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.